Welcome into the Boston Sports Summit. I am T. My name is Tim Barnard. Welcome into the Boston Sports Summit presented by the Grid Network. We have a big show for you tonight. It is all playoff focused and or draft focused because, let's face it, the NFL draft is tomorrow night, round number one, and it is going to be fire, all right? It's going to be a big-time spectacle, as the NFL always loves to do. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the Pats have at number three. Also, as you can see behind me, we got the jerseys going up. We got the Ray Allen Celtic jersey, as well as the new Bruins 100-year centennial jersey. And, you know, they are in the playoffs. The Bruins are going round game number three tonight. And the Celtics have game number two tonight at 7 o'clock. Hence, the early hour of the Boston Sports Summit, because I know you, myself, we're going to want to watch the games. So let's get this show on the road. First and foremost, we got to talk about the Patriots, all right? It is all about the Patriots at number three. You're on the clock. And at number three, what do you think that they're going to do tomorrow night? That's the million-dollar question, right? What are the Patriots going to do? They could go with quarterback. They could go with trade out. If they go with quarterback, they got Daniels. They got May. They got now McCarthy if they trade back. They got Penix, who, again, as you know, I'm a big fan of. You know, I've talked about this before. As you can see, my top quarterbacks, I got Penix at number two. And then basically 3A, 3B, and 3C is McCarthy, Daniels, and May. I know I put 4, 5, 6, but still. And I am really interested to see what they're going to do. But first, a little bombshell hit just the other day, actually 2 days ago, when Diana Rossini tweeted out, the New England Patriots are listening and taking calls from teams looking to move into three. While Elliott Wolf is running point, I'm told Patriots president Jonathan Kraft is heavily involved in the decision-making, which, again, to me, scares the crap out of me. And you know why? Because I hate it when you have owners who have absolutely no right to be in the football decision-making process, making football decisions. And that's probably one of the reasons why Jonathan Kraft is, you know, getting involved, because Bill Belichick is gone. And with Belichick being gone, that means the power can go back to the Crafts, right? The power can go back to the Crafts, and there doesn't need to be any more issues, you know, with, okay, Bill can do whatever he wants type of issues, right? You know, we have a young team, not only on the field, but front office, also the coaching staff is young. So there's a lot that this team needs to, you know, be prepared for. So why wouldn't Jonathan Kraft want to run the team? Well, the reason why, like I said earlier, I hate it is because Kraft knows nothing about football. Sure, he grew up with his father, you know, for the latter half of his life owning the team. I want to say Jonathan was probably in his 20s. I'm not 100% sure on that, when Robert bought the team back in 94. But I am wondering what that heavily involved means, right? Because if it's, you know, a typical owner involvement, hey, we have the number three overall pick, you know, Jonathan, Robert, we have this, we want to take Drake May, or we want to trade this pick because we feel like we can get JJ McCarthy or Michael Penix later. So we're still getting that top tier quarterback, but this is the trade that we're going to have to make. And, you know, if it's something like that, if it's something that comes down to money or just, you know, trying to get their opinion on the value, then fine. You know what? Then I got no problem with that. But if it's Jonathan Kraft now spearheading the whole trade bit, being, you know, calling up teams saying, hey, we want to trade number three. what are you going to give us? And then he's running it and type of deal, or he's on the call with Elliot Wolf and he's kind of like nudging and saying, no, ask for this, like off the call. That's what scares me, because Jonathan Kraft should be nowhere near this. It's, you know, him, Robert, and Robin Glazer. I don't even know why, like Robin Glazer, what, you know, she's a lawyer. Like what, the fact that she's the president of football ops, I'm pretty sure, like, she's a lawyer. How, what are you talking about? Like she should be football operations. I don't know. But so that's the type of heavily involved I need to know. And if it's the latter, if it's the one that I don't like, which scares me as a fan of the Patriots, you know, the Patriots, well, let's face it, they're going to have some explaining to do in terms of Robert Kraft saying multiple times that Jonathan is not involved in the day-to-day operations. That he also goes on to say during both of which, or during Gerard Mayo's introductory press conference, that ownership input will be the same input that we've made for the last three decades. Elliot Wolf, ultimately, football decision-making is down to Gerard and I. And then Gerard saying they as an ownership, don't want to be involved in football decisions. So if Jonathan is heavily involved, then they need to go back and figure out, you know, what they need to say from here on out. Because that's what kills me. The New England Patriots have become the Boston Red Sox when talking to the media. They'll make it sound like everything is okay. Hey, we're not football people. We're not involved. So don't worry. We're good. But then in the background, they're doing everything that they doing everything else, right? And that's what is driving me up a wall. If they truly are involved. Now, before I go on, I do want to, you know, at least specify, I know that Jonathan is not sitting down watching film, trying to say, oh, I like Drake May there. I like his footwork. Or, you know, JJ McCarthy, you know, is cool under pressure. Look at the blitz coming in and look at him staying in the pocket. No, I know Jonathan's not doing that. I'm not that stupid. But if he is the one spearheading everything and that Elliot Wolf gets to, you know, say, I like this, then that scares me because Jonathan should not be. It should just be a, you know, hey, we're going to trade number three. This is what we're going to have to, you know, this is what we can get for it. Here are a couple offers. You know, I like this. So what are your thoughts? Or I know we, you know, if I'm Elliot Wolf, I know we can get more for three. You know, do you like any of these deals? And if the, and then the Kraft can be like, yeah, yes or no, right? But to sit there and, you know, constantly have them tell, say to my face basically that we're not a part of this, we're out of this. And yet you have Diana Russini nationally saying that Jonathan is heavily involved. I mean, like, what are we doing, right? Like, make up your mind. And then the funniest part about it was, again, that story blew up. And the following day, so yesterday, she had to not necessarily rescind what she said, but she had to clarify it, right? By saying the Pats have yet to award the title of GM to Elliot Wolf, who is running point, and it has shifted to a more collaborative process overseen by Jonathan Kraft. Ownership is allowing the football decision makers to make the calls while keeping open and constant line of communication. But make no mistake, the Crafts know everything that is going on, as they should. So that last line I want to just talk about a little bit, because they, you know, the Crafts know everything that is going on, as they should. Yes, you have the number three overall pick in the NFL draft. You sucked so much last season that you were a top three pick with essentially 5 to 6 quarterbacks worthy of first-round draft selections. Now, are they going to turn out to be worthy of first-round draft selections? I don't know. But that's the draft that this is in. So, of course, they should know where they stand, right? They should know what the football guys are doing, as they knew what Bill Belichick was doing. You think that Robert Kraft let Bill Belichick consistently trade back year after year after year? Yes, he did. Like, Bill was like, Robert, I don't like some of these guys that are coming up. I think we can get a equal or better value when we move back into the early second round, or we move back into the 20s or further back into the 20s, you know, or, hey, these two guys are coming up, i.e. Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower. Let's move up. And so Robert's like, of course, Bill. Like, Bill told Robert everything that he was going to do, right? So that's what, like, Robert was kept in the loop. And now I think we're reading a lot into this because it's Elliott Wolf, who's never been a GM and doesn't hold the GM title, also meaning that his contract is up after this draft, basically. So they haven't re-signed Elliott Wolf, and they brought in a new head coach who has only been coaching basically for 5 years, all of which has been with the Patriots. So he's never been truly a defensive coordinator in Gerard Mayo. So truly, this is a rookie staff that we put together all around. And yes, Jonathan Kraft is overseeing this. I get it. But Jonathan is also probably looking at this going, well, I've also been a part of this. Bill has told me just as much as he told, you know, my father. So I am going to step in. I am going to talk to these teams and do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I'm going to be the one negotiating. Elliott Wolf, yes, is running point. He might make the call, get the call to a certain point, and then hand it off to Jonathan, who's going to go the rest of the way, right? Like, that's what scares me. That's what I'm not liking about this. And I find it funny, too, that Diana Rossini, while saying that Jonathan Kraft is heavily involved, the very next day is saying that, oh, it's a collaborative process overseen by Jonathan. Like, seriously? You know, this is what we have to go on? You know, that, oh, no. When I said earlier that Jonathan is heavily involved in the decision-making, no. I just meant that Jonathan is overseeing everything, right? And so can we please just either one, back off, let Elliott Wolf make his own mistakes, basically, or two, admit to it. Admit to being involved. Stop trying to be the Red Sox and hide behind saying, well, what I meant by full throttle was, no. Just admit to it. Just because, again, you're talking to a fan base in the Patriots who are smarter than you think, are smarter than you give them credit for. You know, and we've come a long way from being in Bill We Trust, right? We've come a long way from that. Now, we don't trust anybody because we've realized over the last 6 years to maybe the last decade that Bill has had a lot of trouble with the draft, hence the position that this team is in currently. And with the way the Krafts and Belichick kind of handled that, parting of the ways, it was one thing. And again, I've said it time and time again that Bill needed to go. He needed to go, right? It was done. And don't get me wrong. Thank you. Thank you, Bill Belichick, for all that you did for the Patriots. And I'm not trying to suck up to Bill. I'm just saying, like, he was a massive, massive, massive part of it. You cannot deny that. There is no Brady without Bill. There is no Bill without Brady. Can we at least admit that? Secondly, with the dynasty and everything that's come out recently, Kraft sabotaging Belichick's chances with the Falcons, it's very easy to sit there and look at Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft and just question everything that they're doing. Because you've lost us. If you just let Bill walk away, everything would have been fine. You know, I probably would have had more faith in you. I probably would have believed you a little bit more than I currently do. Because of, hey, you let Bill walk out, you're paying him the $25 million, or he got the job with the Falcons, everything is fine, right? We're cool. But then you had to release the dynasty. And don't tell me that you didn't have stay because you were the executive producer on it, okay? So there's that. And also, too, I mean, with the whole news that Kraft sabotaged Bill, and it behooved Kraft to have Bill get the job. So if it behooved Kraft to have Bill land the Falcons job, but yet he was still so petty that we ended up where we're at. Why am I going to sit here and trust that Jonathan knows what to do? Sit here and trust that Robert knows what to do? I'm not. Like, it's absolutely foolish. It's absolutely foolish. And I don't understand it. And of course, too, you know, Diana Rossini, national, she, you know, had to run that back a little bit, had to clarify, you know, what she meant by Jonathan being heavily involved. But then, you know, if you listen to some of the local guys, they just, it's almost like they're on the take for the most part. And listen, I get it. A lot of some of these guys actually are, you know, and they're good friends with the Krafts. And I got no problem with that. But I just, like, I have a problem with owners not being upfront with their fans. And if this report comes out, there has to be some legitimacy to it. Again, same thing with the Wickersham and the Falcons. Now, Robert might not have called blank up and explicitly said, don't hire this guy on your life. Don't do it. Don't do it. But he might have thrown a few things out there that was kind of shaky, which is why blank ended up not doing that, which is why that article came out blaming Kraft for Bill not getting the job, even though Kraft wouldn't have had to spend a cent this season or this year on Bill Belichick had he got the Falcons job. So that's why I'm just kind of like, just embrace it. At least with Jerry Jones and the Jones family, they're up front. They're like, Jerry's like, I made this decision. My son is the director of player personnel. I made the call on the draft pick. Blame me. They're up front with it, and I respect that. But with Robert in the Red Sox, I know I'm crossing teams here, but still, like, they don't want to accept blame. Nobody in today's generation wants to accept blame. I mean, look at LeBron's press conference. I know I'm jumping all around now, but it's just like, can we please just be upfront and just say, yes, we're more involved now. We didn't have control of this for 20 years, and now we want that control. Is that hard to say? I don't know. Apparently it is. So what to do in number three? Now, a lot of reports recently have been swirling that Jaden Daniels hated his time at Washington, especially for the fact that the Commanders decided to bring in four, I think, other quarterback prospects at once, have dinner together, and because they want to see, oh, who's going to be competitive? Like, what? That, like, that's so dumb. Like, that is such a Washington move because of just how stupid it is. But also, too, the Patriots have been tied to Drake May a lot. And I'll admit, he's got a cannon for an arm. But how often do guys who have cannons for an arm fail to pan out? And that's, and the thing that scares me is that why, when you have so many holes on the offense, why is your first, in so many quarterbacks too, excuse me, when you have so many holes on the offense and so many quarterbacks able to take, especially in the first, you know, 36 picks, 34 picks, because you're at 3-34, why wouldn't you want to trade back to accumulate more draft capital, especially in this year's draft, in the first round, to then take a guy while also securing your receiver position, your left tackle position, maybe another O-line or another receiver, whatever, like, whatever the case may be, right? And then get your quarterback at 34, at 23, at 11, at 13, wherever you trade back to. That's what I find kind of crazy to me, is that everybody wants, we got to take this guy. We got to take this guy. And listen, if I'm wrong about Drake May and he pans out and he's Josh Allen but better, then you know what? I'll own up to it. I'll say, yeah, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't have traded back. But at least with this, instead of throwing all your chips in on number three for the at least the next 3 years, maybe four, why don't you try to accumulate more picks and widen that opportunity? You know, again, I love Michael Penix. You can get, supposedly, you could get Michael Penix at 23. So why wouldn't you do that? You know, why, like, you could get Michael Penix at 34. So why not get multiple first-rounders out of the deal? Now, if other teams right now are being ridiculous saying that, oh, you know, to go from Minnesota, for instance, to go from 11 to 3, we'll give you 11 in next year's second for number 3. If they're being stupid like that, then yeah, of course, you know, don't even entertain that stuff. Laugh in their face and hang up. But if you can get a bag, if you can get 11, 23, next year's first, Christian Darrisaw, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, I don't know, like, not all of those, but you at least get 11, 23, a current player, and next year's first, or 2 years from now's first. I don't know. Like, again, the bag, the massive haul, the team is selling the farm for this, right? Then I would be high, you know, heavily entertaining. But with the report coming out that J.J. McCarthy, the Patriots might trade back, but they might go back to 6 to take J.J. McCarthy, all because he's got Michigan ties and it's Kraft, Brady, and Belichick. I mean, listen to this. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported on Wednesday that although the Patriots project LSU's Jaden Daniels and North Carolina's Drake May ahead of Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, team owner Robert Kraft could be eyeing McCarthy because of his similarities to Tom Brady. That's right, folks. You have to remember, it's the Kraft-Brady to McCarthy connection. That's what we're going to do. You know what? Screw Drake May. Screw Jaden Daniels. No, no, no. Let's go with the national champ. Let's go with the Michigan guy who threw 8 passes against Penn State and won. That's the guy that's going to save this franchise. Why? Because he's a Michigan man. That's right. Brady has built up a great relationship. And even though he's a part owner of the Raiders, we're going to go and get McCarthy because of Brady's relationship. So Fowler goes on in his article to state, quote, my sense after asking around to several sources that the Patriots have Daniels rated ahead of Carolina's Drake May in the pecking order, but still like May's upside. Quote, McCaffrey would fall somewhere after that, though I was reminded Tuesday night to not totally discount Robert Kraft's affinity for Tom Brady, who might see shades of himself in McCaffrey, a fellow Michigan product. The Patriots could trade back and acquire McCaffrey with a later pick. Like, oh, goodness me. Like, if that means they're going to trade back to 6 and get 6 and 47, which I think is what the Giants have, I mean, you could do so much better. You could do so much better. And I know I brought it up. McCaffrey is, you know, my 3A, 3A, B, or C. It fluctuates every day, basically. Whichever film is what I watch the latest, that's who's 3A. But again, it's like you're going to rely on the fact that J.J. McCaffrey wore Michigan blue. You're going to rely on the fact that Tom Brady played at Michigan. Robert Kraft loves Tom Brady with every single ounce. Robert Kraft is absolutely in love with Tom Brady. And that's really why you're going to take a guy. This is why I was fearful of the Krafts being heavily involved, is because you have dumb, stupid stuff like that. You're going off of emotion, not what you actually need. And that's why, again, just please spare me this. I don't need it. You know, if your reason for taking McCaffrey is because you think he's better, then do it. But if also, too, you take him over Penix, I'm like, come on. You know, then who's really making the decisions here? But with the decisions that need to be made, you know what? I wanted to do this because it's a day before the NFL draft. We have a day before the draft, and why not have some fun by doing a mock draft, right? Let's do a mock draft. And as you can see on the screen, it's going to be a full 7-round mock draft, and the speed is on turbo, so don't worry. We'll be just fine. And we're going to, you know, go 50-50, public versus PFF, care about positional value, a little bit higher than what they gave us, a little bit less than middle, but we're going to draft for needs right in the middle, and then randomness is just a tick above less, right? So let's enter the draft. Now, I would like to point out that let's see what we can get. And again, I'm going to be asking for a lot at number 3. So if we start the draft, Caleb Williams and Drake May. If you have any, you know, comments on who I should take, be sure to hit, you know, comment on the video. You know, comment on the video. It helps with the algorithm, but also I get to see what you guys are thinking, what you guys might enjoy or who you might want. So we have 24 trade partners. The Chargers want to trade up. We got the Giants, Titans, Falcons, Bears, Jets, and Vikings. So I keep talking about the Vikings all the time. So let's check out what the Vikings would be willing to give us. So we can only trade next year's draft. We can't go any further than that. So it's not like I could trade, you know, 2 firsts, 2025 first, and a 2026 first. Can't do that. So let's go 11, 23 for number 3. Obviously, it'll likely be accepted. Let's go a first round of next year. And let's go with offensive tackle Christian Darrisaw. And it said the trade will not be accepted. It wasn't accepted. That's fine. So let's throw in the 100. Nah. Let's throw in next year's third. Anything? Nope. All right. So that won't happen. We have three attempts remaining. So you know what? I'm not, like I said, it would be interesting to see what we could get. Obviously, PFF is very rigid, and I will never do a forced trade on this because I think forced trades, just are weak. So let's go. Let's take the number three guy. We'll go quarterback. We got Jaden Daniels. I know I keep talking about Michael Penix, but I like Jaden Daniels. So let's take Jaden Daniels at three. So now we jump all the way ahead to 34. All right, let's look at the trade options. We have Washington wants to come up. They got 36 and 40. That's two picks away. So let's see if we can get both picks. All right. Obviously, it won't be accepted. We'll give them – what if we give them next year's third? 103. Wow, they really don't like that offer. You know what? We don't need next year. All right. Next year's second rounder. And then next year, fourth. Let's try that. Or actually, let's get rid of the fourth. Let's see what we can get. Oh, baby. Ah, how about a third? Third and a fourth for Juju and that? No? Damn. All right. Let's go the second. Let's go with 34, second, and Juju Smith-Schuster. There we go. All right. So now Washington's on the clock. See? Look at that. We just made a trade. Why? Because I can't stand Juju. I think he blows. And the fact that he had that stupid video on Snapchat. What an idiot. What a friggin' idiot. So, all right. So we jump to 36 and 40. Let's resume. Washington took Tyler Newbin and Mike Sanristel, local Everett boy, went 35 to Arizona. So now... Oh, look at that. Both Bo Nix and Michael Penix. Sheesh. So let's see what we can get at receiver because obviously this team is in desperate need of a receiver. Xavier Worthy. That dude was the speed demon out of Texas. He ran the fastest 40 time. I don't like that. Malachi Corley. My boy, Florida boy, Ricky Pearsall. That's tough. What's at the tackle position? Jordan Morgan out of Arizona. He's a pretty good player. Morgan needs to get stronger to play his tackle and guard on the other, but his desirable athletic traits such as fast hands and feet bolster starting caliber potential. I like that. You need to focus on that. So, all right. You know what? Let's go. Let's get the tackle. Let's go Jordan Morgan. And now we're at 40. Where, let's see, Javion Sanders, Ricky Pearsall. I like Ricky, but I feel like we got a lot of guys similar to him. If we had a solid X, then I wouldn't mind getting Ricky. But I also like Xavier Leggett. He is a physical specimen. So let's 6'3", 227. And if you listen to his press conferences, the way he talks, it's awesome. Absolutely would love to see his Southern accent in Massachusetts. But before we do that, because we don't pick until 68, yeah, we'll leave it at that. All right, so let's take Xavier Leggett. Let's get the receiver position, and now we're at 68. All right, 68. We got a couple trade options here. You can get the Giants, 70. And 107, the Cardinals are looking to trade up with their 71st. Let's see, maybe get the 90th too. Man, nobody wants to give away that second pick. I'm also greedy too. Like, if we're going to make this trade, we got to make this trade. You got to make it worth my while. All right, 74. And they give us 79. Nope. Let's give them 103, 231. Nothing. And next year's sixth. How about that? Let's just take away from next year. Nah, we're good. Let's just go back to drafting a player. All right, who do we have? Defensive lineman. Ooh, Brandon Coleman. Let's see. I mean, we're in desperate need of, again, just everything. You know, look, QB, wide receiver, tackle, edge. I know edge, but, again, it's tough. Ray Davis, he had a day against Florida, man. That was a tough game to watch. But great if you're a big fan of Kentucky and Ray Davis. So, you know what? Let's do this. Let's go. Let's get Brandon Coleman. Let's get another tackle, you know, just because we can't get enough of, you know, we can't get enough offensive linemen. I mean, with how often these guys can go down. Well, still got people who want to trade. Chargers go back to 105. Can we get 103? Six. Next year is. Yeah, we can do that. Let's do that. 50-50. There we go. So now we just made another trade. We got 105 and 110 in next year's seventh for 103, 193, 231, a fifth, and a sixth. All right. So now we're back on the clock for good. No more trades here. As you can see, the Chargers took Cade Stover and the Cardinals took Michael Hall Jr. Let's see. Who do we have here? We got some guys. Ina Smith, Devondre Sweat, Brendan Rice, Sione Vakai. But if we go back all the way to the top, we got tight end Ben Sinnott, who had a heck of a year, overall grade 82. When you look at his – let's look at his 6'4", 245. He's a true jack-of-all-trades tight end who can line up in the backfield, the line of scrimmage. His game lacks a true trump card, but he's the type of versatile role player the NFL team wants in their tight end room. And, again, with Hunter Henry being our lone guy, I think that's where we need to go. So let's do it. Let's get Ben, and then we're back on the board at 110. We give up 110. Can we get next year fourth? Fifth? Nah, we're just going to make picks from here on out. Jamari Thrash. Jerrion Jones. I like it. I like what I'm seeing. Tyke Smith. I mean, we do need some to pair. Javondre Sweat, 6'4", 362. He has the ideal size for the interior at his best. He's an impact versatile interior, but the weight and conditioning will determine how often. Well, you know what? He's got that ideal size, though, and if we could pair him with Christian Barmore, man, that would be electric. So let's go there. Ooh, Mason Smith would have been nice. Caden Wallace. I like Will Shipley. We also need, again, we can never take enough linemen or receivers. You know, don't forget that. Jaheim Bell, Florida State, Cam Hart. Jalen Coker, local boy, Holy Cross. Jordan Winnington, Zach Zinter. Go back up. Jordan McGee, Theo Johnson. You know what? Let's go with Rice. Let's go with Luke. Luke McCaffrey. If I remember correctly, actually, I think he is related to Christian McCaffrey. So that would be an interesting pick for sure to have another guy in the league. And, oh, I forgot about this. Let's – what do we have? Will Reichard. There we go. All right. Our last pick, round six. Let's take the kicker. Well, because, God, do we need kick of help. So we got Will Reichard to round out the draft. So let's look at our mock draft here. Jaden Daniels at quarterback at third overall. We traded a 34th and a second next year, as well as Juju, to get 36 and 40. With that, we took Jordan Morgan and Xavier Leggett. We got Brandon Coleman at 68, Ben Sano at 105, because we traded for 105, traded back to 105 and 110 in next year's seventh for 103, 193, and 231 next year's fifth and sixth. At 110, we got Tavondre Sweat, 137, Luke McCaffrey, and then we finish it off with kicker out of Alabama, Will Reichard, and our overall draft grade is a B-, but that doesn't matter because I like it, and I hope you like it as well. So that was fun. I think it was a good time. Hopefully you liked it, enjoyed it. And if, hey, you know what? It's if you don't, you can always let me know. You can let me know if you liked it or not right here at Twitter, Boss, B-O-S, Sports Summit, or X. I always do that. You got Instagram, Boston Sports Summit, YouTube, Boston Sports Summit, and then obviously live on the Grid Network every Wednesday. Next, we got some playoff hockey, baby. We got the Bruins. And what happened games one and two will forever be a mystery to me, and why they did what they did. And no, I'm not talking about their goalie platoon, because you know what? That was actually the best part of them, games one and two. Jeremy Swayman was a little bit off, made at least that one careless error, but it wasn't the worst thing in the world. All right. So let's look at game one first. We'll do that. And then we'll move on. But before we get looking at game one, I want to get you guys excited, right? Because we're talking about a fun game it was. And
they call him the Big Rig, three-time Stanley Cup champion, Pat Maroon, with the big hit on Timothy Liljegren.
Bam! Pat Maroon throwing Liljegren over into the Bruins bench. Love to see it. That's why I was excited to get the Big Rig, Pat Maroon. And I'm glad that he has been able to at least produce in game one with that massive hit. But when looking at game one, the funny part was Toronto totally played way out of their game and trying to be physical with the Bruins. But honestly, it fell over the boards like Liljegren into the Bruins bench. That was stupid on their part, because they're a finesse team. They are a more finesse team than any team I think left in the playoffs. Now, that doesn't mean they won't hit, because they actually out-hit the Bruins 52-51 in game one, but it didn't have a factor. It wasn't a big factor, because just because you hit somebody doesn't mean that you're more physical than the other team. It might look it, but it's all about the hit and the timing of the hit. Did the hit really force, you know, them to get to play scared, you know? And so I liked game one. It was a fun time when we had Johnny Beecher. Welcome to playoff hockey, baby. Welcome to Stanley Cup playoffs. Rookie scoring his first goal in his first game. Love to see it on his first shift, no less. He opened up the scoring. And then DeBrusk, you know, Carlo was able to score the next goal off of Austin Matthews' miss. So basically, Jeremy Swayman had that terrible play where he tried to retrieve the puck away from Matthews, but Matthews got it and had a wide open net from a tough side angle. It hit the front post and it bounced away. The Bruins were able to get it, obviously. And then literally the next sequence of plays, they skated it right down in the offensive zone, got it behind the net, passed it out to Kylo at the blue line, who throws like a half slapper, and they got up two. DeBrusk with two of his own. It was great to see. It was a lot of fun. Glad that we stomped on them in game one. And the funny part was, yes, Jake DeBrusk shined in game one. And yes, Jake DeBrusk is going to be a free agent this offseason. But he's making $4 million. And for a guy who only scored 19 goals and 21 assists this season, why would I even consider paying him $4 million? Right? He's trying, I think he's looking for $5, $6, $7 million. He thinks he's that type of player. The last two seasons, he scored 25 or more goals, you know, while playing less games than he did this season. He played 80 games. I think the lowest amount of games he's played was, I think, 71, you know, over the last three seasons. Or he played 71 and then somewhere in the 60s, the two seasons, he scored 25 and 27. So just because you did that, why would I even consider, even if we were to make a long run in these playoffs and DeBrusk is one of the reasons why we do it, I still don't like paying him $5, $6, $7 million. I think that's friggin' ridiculous, you know, because it to earn that type of money, it has to be well-rounded. And if you want to hold me to that, then you can obviously say, Tim, well, David Pastrnak's getting paid, what, $10, $11 million? True. But he's at least putting up 50 goals a season, you know? And then, yes, in the playoffs, he's like half there, half not. He kind of disappears. Everybody gets more physical. He can't play the physical game. But, you know, with DeBrusk, the dude should be on the third line. He should be a consistent third liner. Problem is, we're so weak for talent that he has to play on the second line. If DeBrusk was a third line guy, I think he'd be playing a lot better than he is, or at least statistically be a lot better than he is. But, you know, that's – it's just how it is. And so, great game one performance. And then you have game two. And the Bruins, I mean, they honestly, it feels like they have no idea what they're doing half the time. Because, again, as I stated at the top of the segment, it wasn't the platoon that I was concerned with. Because when I saw it, I go, listen, even if we lose this game, it would have to take a lot for Allmark to be the reason why we lost. And that's before I even saw a second of this game. And then I watched the game and I'm like, Allmark was phenomenal. Hell, he was the one that kept us in the game. Allmark was the one that kept us in the game. And our team just was out to lunch. I mean, they were just like, hey, we're good. We were undefeated against these guys all season long. So we'll be fine. We'll beat them. No, you weren't. And that's what bothers me, is that I loved, actually, Allmark's game. And they have to continue this. I swear, they really have to go Swayman Allmark. It just feels like that's what they need to do. Because the team didn't show up. The forward group, first and foremost, had zero forechecking. There were multiple times during that game where they threw the puck into the offensive zone and then either went off to go change or were just kind of like, yeah, we'll maybe go after it. We'll attempt to go after it, but we're not going to, you know, dump and chase. No, they just hung back. They skated in. Toronto was able to collect it and then move down to the other end of the ice. And you spent a lot of your time in the defensive zone, and you sucked. You really sucked. And the funny part is Toronto's D is thin. If you can stay in their zone for a long period of time, you'll get them. They have a good goaltender, Ilya Samsonov. It's not bad, but it's not like he's elite either. He's no Andre Vasilevsky. And like I said, the defense is weak. I.e., look at how Johnny Beecher got his goal, right? You had Austin Reeves and Joel Edmondson coming in and pinning Pat Maroon to the boards, leaving Jesper Boqvist and Johnny Beecher 2-on-1. And Johnny Beecher was able to capitalize in game one. You know, they're not great defensively. They're not sound defensively. So that's why it's like, if you can dump and chase and force Toronto to be in their own zone, you're going to be fine. But they didn't. And while the Toronto forwards are arguably the most talented group of forwards in the Stanley Cup playoffs, they might be talented, but does that mean they're defensively sound? No. And I want to talk about the John Tavares goal. And you have Kevin Shattenkirk standing right there with the star over his head. Yep, I know. I had a little fun with this because look at where the puck is. That's the direction that it takes. And look at Kevin Shattenkirk already coiling up. Like, I understand that it might not be his game to be the blocking defenseman that I think the Bruins desperately need to be that defensive, strong defensive guy. But, I mean, come on. You had Jacob Lauko, who had no right to block a shot, you know, in the final seconds at the end of game one. And that's exactly what he did because he's a tough SOB. But with this, I mean, like, dude, you have to block that shot. And then Ullmark, yeah, listen, I said I enjoyed Ullmark's game. I don't believe that he was the sole reason why the Bruins lost. But when you look at that, you know, and you see where Shattenkirk is, he had to hug that post a lot more. And I understand it's the blocker, but dude, to get beat short side like that, I mean, that's tough. That's really, really tough to do. It's a tough look, you know? Like, even when I watched it live and I saw that exact replay initially, I'm like, there, you know, dude, you have to be more up against the post. You have to know where you are in relation to the net. And as for tonight's game, it's going to be – interesting because Peak is out, which sucks. You know, I thought Peak has actually been a great addition. And I said this. I said, listen, he played for a shitty Columbus Blue Jackets team. So, you know, let's actually put him on a good team and see how he is defensively. You know, because I know everyone's like, oh, he's a minus 42 in his career in Columbus, blah, blah, blah. Or whatever it was. I get it. I looked at that. But at the same time, I also understood it's Columbus. Okay? So let's see what happens. So now with Peak out, they called up Lowry and had Wertherspoon as the sixth man. And what they're doing tonight, which I'm surprised with, is they're sitting Grizzlick in favor of putting Lowry with McAvoy in Wertherspoon with Shattenkirk, the guy I just talked about. And I love it. I love it. Sitting Grizzlick, you know, listen, again, he's another guy I was very willing to trade last offseason because look at his postseason stats. He's got 0 goals, 0 assists, and 0 points over the last 3 postseasons and is a total -7. I mean, what more do you need? He can't play in the playoffs. And you know, and that's why I'm like, you know what? Send the kid in. Send Lowry in. He was a great, great player. Now it's going to be interesting to see how defensively sound Lowry is because he's going to go up against arguably the best forward group in the NHL with Tavares and Matthews. But let's do it. You know, I was already looking at this season as we were going to be, you know, the third or seventh or eighth seed, you know, and that we're going to have to rely on some of our young guys. So let's do it. Let's freaking do it. I'm excited. Game 3 is going to start in about 5 minutes. And I got one more segment for you guys, but don't worry because we got some playoff basketball coming at you. Game 1, Boston Celtics. versus the Miami Heat, it was exactly what you thought it was. Boston came out and absolutely dominated the Heat for most of this game. Now, of course, Miami did go on some runs. They did cut it to, I think, within 12 at one point late in the game. But then Boston was able to take it and run away with it, which, as they should have. And the funny part was, I'm like, see, this is it. This is the Celtics team that needs to show up night in and night out and realize that, you know what? This is the playoffs. We're going to go out and take it. We're not going to be go up 30 and then just rest on our laurels and be okay with it. No. You and I, we're going at this. Who wants it more? We do. That's right. We're taking it, whether you like it or not, because that's how good this team is. And so before I go on, what kind of made me a little bit surprised and kind of made me a little bit, let's actually pump the brakes on this, is the fact that the media and the social media, especially attention on game number one, was the fact that it felt like the series is over, that it was a one and done. It was a play-in game. Look, the Celtics are already into the next round. They already swept the Miami Heat after playing one game. No, there's still at least three more games to be played. And that's why I sat back and I was seeing all these posts like, see, all you Miami fans, you were chanting, we want Boston. Now look what happened. Really, guys? Is this the first time that you've ever heard the opposing fan base say, we want Boston, and then they get Boston, and you subsequently kick their ass? You kick their ass in the series, not the game, folks. All right? So let's pump the brakes. It's game number two. Literally, we should go out and put on a show once again. The talent discrepancy is no match. The Celtics are far and away the more talented team than Miami, especially without Jimmy Butler and Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier, I think, is kind of a big miss for the Miami Heat, you know, dealing with that neck injury. And it would have been a hell of a lot more fun if both Rozier and Butler were playing in this game. But unfortunately, that's just how the chips lie. So because of that, it's no question. The second round is a foregone conclusion, really. It's what are we going to do with it in, 4 or 5? If we go 6, then something really went wrong with this team. But that's really the story. The story is, when is the second round going to happen, right? Because the Celtics are 15-point favorites tonight. 15! Like, I guarantee you it would be 2, 4, at most 7.5 if Jimmy Butler were fully healthy. And so that's why it's kind of like, all right, you know, let's just get to the second round. Like, that's how I feel. I feel like it's the end of the regular season all over again. Because game one, it was dumb. It was stupid. The fact that they got as close as they did late in the game was ridiculous. But let's not forget, Caleb Martin, the guy, I'm like back and forth on this. A part of me, you know, the green teamer in me looks at it going, oh, yeah, he totally went for Tatum. He might not have wanted to necessarily undercut him the way he did, but he 100% went after him. I mean, you could tell. The guy basically jumped from the friggin' elbow all the way to hip check Tatum the way he did. And so, You got that part of me, but the other part too says, like, you know, really? Like, are we going to play this game? Are we going to really, you know, say that, oh, look, you know, the Heat, Pat Riley, Kevin McHale with the clothesline of Kurt Rambis, Pat Riley was the coach, and, you know, Pat Riley hates the Celtics, you know, which I don't agree with the fact that Eric Spoelstra called a timeout, you know, down 16 with a buck and a half to go in the game. I also don't agree with the fact that Tatum, Brown, and our starting five were out there a buck and a half up 16, right? Like, that's just stupid. So, again, I'm a little bit split on that, but I do kind of want to err on the, yeah, there was a little bit, hey, you know what, we're not going to win this game tonight, so let's just go out there and show them who's more physical, and that's us. And that's what it was. I don't think Caleb Martin intentionally wanted to hurt Tatum and knock him out for the series. But at the same time, yeah, he kind of might wanted to prove a point a little bit there. And so, really, the only story that I like that I'm wondering is, one, when is the second round going to hit? And two, is Miami going to make it interesting? And if so, how are the Celtics effing it up, right? Like, that's what's going to bother me. Because if the Celtics allow this to go six games, then the Celtics clearly are already looking ahead to the second round. And that's the story right there. If they keep winning, if they keep dominating, you know, then it's cool, great. But overall, the Celtics should sweep the Heat, or at least a gentleman sweep, you know, win in five. That's really what it all comes down to. So, hey, I appreciate you guys listening and watching. You know, this is the Boston Sports Summit. I am your host, Tim Barnett, and it is on the Grid Network's YouTube channel every single Wednesday at 7 p.m., the usual time. Tonight we had a special show for you with the NFL draft, the mock draft, and then talking about playoff Bruins, playoff Celtics. So it's going to be fun. Next week, there's going to be a lot to talk about, and hopefully we get positive news next week. We got both the Bruins and the Celtics going to the second round. So let's hope so, because the game's just kicked off. It is 7 o'clock. So we're gonna go in and watch some of those games. We're going to be talking about it on Twitter, and maybe even might go live later tonight on Instagram. So make sure that you like, share, subscribe. Please, please, please comment on this. It helps with the algorithm. Like it. It helps. You can watch it, or you can follow me where I'm much more active on my X and Instagram accounts. X, it's at BOS Sports Summit. Okay, sports is plural, BOS Sports Summit on X. On Instagram, it's Boston Sports Summit. Also on YouTube, Boston Sports Summit. And like I said, live on the Grid Network, GRYD Network YouTube channel. And you can also find the audio of this show on Apple, Spotify, wherever podcasts are on audio. So thank you guys once again for listening. I am your host, Tim Barnett, and this is the Boston Sports Summit presented by the Grid Network. Thank you so much. God bless, and let's go Bruins. Let's go Celtics, baby. I'll see you then. I'll see you next week.